Welcome, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to our event to discuss the intergenerational perspectives on the current uprising that's happening around the country and throughout the world, actually. My name is Daryl Heller, and I am the director of the IU South Bend Civil Rights Heritage Center. And we're co-sponsoring this event with the Black Lives Matter South Bend chapter this evening. For those of you outside of our local area, the Civil Rights Heritage Center was founded in 2000 and grew out of the IU South Bend students who took what we call the Freedom Summer Tour to visit historic civil rights sites in the South. That visit moved them to action that when they returned, they were committed to working on issues of civil rights and social justice in their local community. The Civil Rights Heritage Center itself moved to its current location in the former Ingman Public Natatorium in 2010. This public swimming pool, which was originally built in 1922, fully excluded African Americans or segregated them for the first 28 years of its existence. And it was only through the work of African American activists and their white allies that it actually became an institution that lived up to its public charge. It was ultimately forced to live up to this mandate through this work. And today the center serves as a meeting and event space and as a bridge between the university and the larger community to address issues of local and national import. Our focus is on education, culture, and activism, and to build coalitions and relationships with other organizations and individuals that are committed to civil rights and social justice. Our co-sponsors, the South Bend chapter of Black Lives Matter, was formed in 2016. The hashtag itself, Black Lives Matter, was formed in 2013 in response to the acquittal of Trayvon Martin's murderer. The mission of the South Bend chapter of Black Lives Matter is to seek social, economic, and legal justice for all Black and Brown people. In its mission statement, the Black Lives Matter South Bend chapter states that Black people have been personally and systematically deprived of power, and it is our duty to reclaim it. Everyone deserves equal opportunities, equal rights, and freedom. And we will achieve these for Black and Brown people through demanding justice by fighting for affordable housing, trauma-informed care, economic empowerment, environmental justice, equitable education, and police accountability. Along with the Black Lives Matter Global Network, Black Lives Matter South Bend is committed to eradicating white supremacy and supporting all Black lives, including Black queer and transgender communities, the disabled, the undocumented, those with records, women, and those all along the gender spectrum. And these are our two co-hosts for tonight. So just a quick word about why we're here. These past 2 weeks have witnessed a historic uprising across the country and around the world in response to the murder and execution of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Hundreds of thousands of people have taken to the streets demanding racial justice and an end to a white supremacist power structure that has had its knee on our collective neck for centuries. I'm not gonna make a long statement here about these events because that's why we have these panelists and our guests tonight. But I do want to say that this particular moment that we're in will take the action of all of us to make the social transformation that we so desperately want and so desperately need. So before we get to the panelists, I wanna do just a little housekeeping. We have a really large audience tonight. At the moment, we have close to 200 people and counting who are joining us this evening. So I'm asking everyone to please stay on mute. Keep your audio on mute so that we can focus on the speakers. Because of the size of this audience, we won't be able to take comments directly. But please feel free to pose those questions or comments in our chat section. And I'll try to leave space at the end of this evening to respond to as many as I can. We're scheduled for this event to last 1 hour, and I'll try really hard to keep us to that time. So with that housekeeping, I want to give a quick introduction to our speakers, and then we'll get going. I'll start with Brother Sage. Brother Sage is a longtime activist and African-American griot. He brings a wealth of experience and wisdom over many years of working with HBCUs and many communities around the country. Our second panelist is Kylie Scales. She's the Managing Director of Black Lives Matter Network Action Fund and Black Lives Matter Global Network, Inc. Kylie has built the sound infrastructure around this global phenomenon that demands an end to state-sanctioned violence against Black people and has focused on evolving the movement from a hashtag to a political and cultural powerhouse for Black people across the globe. She's launched its arts and culture platform, its presence in the fine arts world, as well as created Black Lives Matter, What Matters 2020. A civic engagement campaign targeted toward Black millennial and Gen Z voters who are at risk of disenfranchisement in one of the most important election cycles in our lifetime. And our third panelist is Nasir Wells, who is a South Bend resident and a 2020 graduate of Riley High School. He will be attending IU Bloomington in the fall. And last but certainly not least, Nadia Hanna is also a South Bend youth and the current student at Clay High School. We met her because she spoke at one of our Black Lives Matter rallies here in South Bend, and she set the crowd on fire. And she's not shy about speaking her truth, so we look forward to hearing from her as well. So normally, we pay deference to our elders and have them speak first, but this movement is a critical movement where young people are leading. And so I'm actually gonna reverse that, and I'm gonna start and ask our young people to speak first, and we'll go down the line to each of our panelists. And what I'd like to ask first of everyone is just simply, how are you doing in this particular moment with so much emotions and the painful images that we have seen, you know, over the last 2 weeks. If you could just say, how are you? How are you doing? And I'll start with you, Nadia.
Hi. I wasn't doing okay, honestly, because it's sad and it's sickening. I wasn't able to sleep for the longest. Like, I've just now been able to start sleeping because this affected me so bad. To see this on my Facebook timeline, how they killed an innocent man, and now he's not the only one that they have killed. It doesn't sit right with me that I live in a world full of hatred because of my skin color. People don't like me because of my skin color. So I really want to make a change. And this is just well with me, with who I am, because I stick up for what is right, and this is not right.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. How about you, Nasir?
I have really been just observing what has been going on, educating myself and others online. It's horrible what's going on in our country, and it still has been going on, but what do you expect from America? It's like systems is built on this, so what do we expect? Took 400 years to get here, it's gonna take 400 more to get out. So I'm just really happy to see in this time that people are trying to come together, because it's been 60 years since we ever seen this ever, like rallies all over our country for this one man who died and the many others who lost their lives. So I'm really happy to see that. But other than that, I've been really just numb, because it's like you see it so much, it almost becomes normal. But I'm glad that we see an uprising and people trying to stop the criminal justice system from keep on going, like with what's going on, like reforming policies or reforming the prison system. It's like we need to get that done, or the next generation is going to have it the same way that every other generation before had it.
Great, thank you. And Kylie, you're right in the thick of it, kind of with this global, national and global perspective. How are you doing?
Well, I echo a lot of what the young folk have contributed. It's just been, there's a lot of emotions, and what I can say is really feel all feels, because this is an important time to honor how you're feeling in this moment. It's really different, but I will say that it is different. This feels different. I was really sad. I've been sad like all month, you know, one thing after the next. So I've been sad. And then 15 days ago, I was tweeting something, you know, from BLM, and I saw we were trending. And I was like, you know, we don't usually trend, you know, like, you know, people use the hashtag, we don't usually trend. So I checked and I saw what I saw. And I was so, I think I was like, I was just numb. Like I just, I was done being, I couldn't even be angry anymore. I was just like numb. And then at first, and then I started to get angry. Because then I saw just the blatant way that the police officer, I couldn't really watch the whole thing at first. It took a long time. But I saw, it was just, it felt so blatant. Like we had been, like we'd been through so much. We'd been saying their names. There was Ahmad, there was Nina Cobb, there was Dejon Reed, there was Breonna Taylor, like just back to back to back. And then for someone to be so blatant, so you don't hear what I'm saying? Like, you know, then I got mad. And so then I just kind of like started reading more and just connecting with what people were saying. And well, actually the first thing I did was I sent a tweet from BLM, and the tweet read, this is before he was named. There were only a few news articles or news people that were promoting the fact that he was named or said his name. So I sent a tweet and it said, his name was George Floyd. Say his name, pray for his family, demand justice. And I tweeted that. And instantly that tweet was fire. It just was like retweeted and liked. And I was like, oh no, we're all pissed. Yeah. And when I realized that, I suddenly got hope. And I thought, could this be the final straw? Could this have brought us to our knees? Could this be the thing that puts us so low that we have to rise up? Is this it? Is this the moment? And I think those answers have been coming in the week since that moment, but that was just this second of, this one's different. So that's how I've been.
Oh, great. We're gonna come back. I actually wanna talk quite a bit about the response to that moment and like what's been happening over the last several weeks. But I wanna just check in with you, Brother Sage. How are you doing in this moment?
Well, I'm going to come at it from a different way. Okay, I'm not going to come about that because there's enough said about that. What I'm going to say to both Nadia and to Nasir, as a parent and as an adult, I would like to apologize to you for the messed up world we've given you. I want you to hear that from an old guard. Because part of the problem is you have answers that we can't take time to listen to in order to push on forward and come together as human beings. Now, I wasn't pleased about George Garner, but it's been difficult to be pleased about America because America's never been pleased about us. This is just one of many things that need to be corrected. So I'm hoping and praying through working with young people such as this, that tomorrow's a brighter day for humankind. Because if it isn't, we're in trouble. We're in enough trouble already. I think it's important for us to recognize that these are the future leaders of tomorrow today. And we need to learn how to listen to them.
Good. Thank you, sir. I want to touch on something that you said, Kylie, and I want to direct it to Nasir and Nadia first, but I would would like certainly Kylie and Brother Sage to mention, like, what you said, Kaylee, was this Kylie, this felt different. And for you, Nasir and Nadia, who may not have kind of seen big social movements, certainly not like this, like some of us have, how did this strike you? Like, what is your perspective? Why this uprising? Why are people responding after so many Black bodies have been paraded in front of us, killed unjustly and unarmed? Why do you think that this response has taken on the character that it has? Yeah,
let's hear. I feel like the outrage is different now, because even that we have seen multiple Black bodies being murdered on camera in the past decade, it's just seeing, even though it's like popular around the world, George Floyd was literally being killed right there, a man physically kneeling on his neck. People are recording him. The woman who's recording him is now has PTSD from that. Like, you can hear it in her voice how she's shocked to see what's going on and nobody's doing nothing. And it's sad that nobody could do nothing because of this inherent fear we have of the police. And he was just there dying. So no matter what race, religion, or what social standpoint you had, when you saw that video of George Floyd being murdered, it was like, we gotta do something about this. That should not be allowed. It should not take this long for a man to be indicted for clearly murdering somebody on camera and four other men clearly on his body, killing him. So outrage was well deserved, even though plenty of Black bodies have been murdered on camera and you can tell that it was unjust. But I think this one hit home because it was just like the atmosphere at the time was just like, we gotta do something. We gotta do something.
Do you have any thoughts, Nadia?
I feel like this was the straw that broke the camel's back. I feel like everyone is just tired of this. And I feel like more young people are starting to wake up and realize this isn't right. And everybody's seen that video. It took me so long to watch that video because it was heartbreaking. But you can sit there and watch the man screaming, "Help, I can't breathe." That right there should tell you, like, you need to help somebody. And to be scared of the police, nobody helped because we have this fear of the police because of our skin color. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think it's right. And I feel like so many people are starting to wake up. Anybody to watch that video, there's no way to justify it. It's wrong. They killed him for no reason, only because of his skin color. That is no way for somebody to die. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel.
Yeah, and Kylee, you've been around, you were almost certainly in New York when Eric Garner was killed in Staten Island, am I correct?
Yes.
But what makes this different, like from your perspective, from all of the years of organizing and activism you've been engaged in?
Yeah, I echo the young people are very astute. I think that, as Nasir said, you know, it was the way in which we had to witness. It was both of those things. It was the straw that broke the camel's back. And it was just really the way in which George Floyd sacrificed and gave his spirit away for all of us to see. It was the way it happened. It was what he said. It was the fact that he called to his mother who died. We watched his spirit reunite with his mother. And that is not, we as human beings, that changes us. That's not something that human beings can witness and not be forever changed. It's impossible. And that video went so widespread. Children saw it, adults saw it. Like it was such a moment of connecting, just watching life pass and watching someone so cavalierly take it. And then of course, as Nasir said, it was, people were literally afraid to do anything. People were watching and were afraid to do anything because of our history with police. It just made it that moment of reckoning. And I think it was a lot of things. I think it was the fact that there had been so many in close succession before. I think it was the fact that we were living in this COVID moment where we are already in fear and already in our emotional, because our family members are dying and we're afraid and it's the unknown. And it was just this chaotic moment. And we know throughout history that chaotic moments bring forth transformation. That's what is required to transform. Mm-hmm. And so I do believe that all of this is divine. It had to occur in the way that it did. George sacrificed his life for us mm-hmm. because we were intended to transform.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And do you have anything to add, Brother Sage?
Well, I think it's important for us. I'm very fortunate. You know, first of all, I want to thank you and George for putting this together, because these kind of discussions need to happen more often. But one thing I am thankful for to all of you is I will soon be at the 75th century mark. And even though we're looking at George Floyd specifically, I'm thankful that I'm still here and I can talk to you about it, because we would like to provide the roadmap, the guidance to each and every one of you, so you can live life and not have to go through the same trials and tribulations that keep going over and over and over again. Because really, you haven't seen anything yet. None of us lived in the Civil War. We've gone through difficult times. Probably the most unique time for us is the fact that so much change has occurred in the last 20, 30 years. Because once upon a time, it was virtually impossible for anybody to listen to it at all. But now we have that platform, and we're dependent upon you to be able, in a loving kind of way, say to the people, we need to address these issues. I think it's extremely important, and I'd be willing to offer anything I have to young people who are in quest of that mission, because it's your world, and today is the first day of the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Good. And what have each of you been doing over the last 2 weeks? How have you dealt with this? And what demonstrations have you participated in? What is your perspective on the demonstrations? Because as you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the violence and nonviolence or peaceful demonstrations. Is it peaceful demonstration is a hallmark of kind of what's expected? But as each of you said, anger is one of those emotions. How have you expressed it over the last 2 weeks? What have you been doing?
What I've been doing, I have actually been to 3 protests and I spoke at one of them. I touched on a topic of generational trauma in our communities and how it's not discussed. Like being inherently scared of the police and afraid of the system is generational trauma passed down and taught to us by our predecessors who had to deal with things such as like police brutality. So I've been really trying to really get people to recognize that there is generational trauma in African-American communities and communities of color that hasn't been touched on, especially Black communities, since we had a terrible 400 years leaving those shores and coming here and going through chattel slavery. But other than that, in order to deal with my mental stress and the way it has on my mind, I go to a place called Transformation Ministries in South Bend, and they opened up a discussion space for Black people and people of color to do what we're doing here now, express how we feel about the current atmosphere. And I got to let a lot of stuff off of my chest, seeing that I was just letting people know that we also have to do the work on ourselves. If we want to attack this right, we have to come in with a strategy. You can't play chess if you don't have a strategy in place. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kylie, I know you've been really busy. What does that look like?
So the last few weeks has been a whirlwind. So I've been to some demonstrations, which have been beautiful. And first, let me just say that this movement is gonna, we as we can see, just hearing these young people and their brilliance and their intuitiveness and their reflectiveness, we know this is going to happen because of young people. Like, you go to these demonstrations, it's the young people that are out here. It's the young people that are doing the speaking, that are leading the charge, that are moving the needle. And that's amazing to see. And it reflected clearly here today. The other thing that's happening is that we are pushing the agenda. So I've been saying to a lot of folks, a couple things. So I've been saying to a lot of folks, there's a window open. They feel this is different because there's a window open. There's more people talking. There's more talks. There's more discussions about things we weren't talking about 2 weeks ago. There's a window open. So we have to break down the wall. Like, this is the time. Ask for it all. Do all the things. Say all the things. Ask for all the things. Because this is, we're seeing the impact of a global community being brought to their knees and rising up. We're watching that. So if we sit here and we don't rise up too and push down all the walls that we can in our environment, then we are wasting this moment. And it takes all of us to do all the things. And so we've been pushing our agenda. So we've been talking a lot about defunding the police before, you know, that conversation, please, no, it's not happening. It's way radical. It still is, but it's a conversation that we are now having. And there are not just people that are having the conversation. There are people that are that are moving legislation to affect that change. Like, that to me is just push the window, push the door, push the wall. Because we can start having these conversations and continue to have these conversations. So that's been a lot of what we were doing. We're circulating petitions. Over 1 million people signed it to defund the police and, you know, to do all these things. And we've been cultivating language and promoting talking points and giving people a breakdown of what all of this means, how this is not new, how this is things that organizers have been talking about for decades, but now we can talk about it. Oh, sorry. But now we can talk about it. Now we can actually have conversations around the thing that we've always wanted. So we can't stop now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've heard you and other people say it's like the window is open. Now we got to go in and kick down the door so that everybody can come in and we can transform this thing.
That's right.
Brother Sage or Nadia, how have you been over the last 2 weeks and what have you been doing? Nadia, I know that you spoke at a rally we had here in South Bend.
I've spoken at two of them, mm-hmm. and I've been to three. And I've been protesting. I've been educating people online because there's a lot of ignorance online.
How has that been? What kind of response? What have you been responding to online?
A lot of all lives matter. And I've been explaining what they mean when they say all lives matter. So if a person says all lives matter, this is how I explain it to them. So if a house is on fire, the fire department is going to come and they're going to set that house out, right? They're going to put that house out. They're not going to spray every other house in the neighborhood because it's not on fire, because they don't need it. We're not saying the other houses don't matter, but when those other houses catch it on fire, we're going to attend to them. We need that same energy as Black people. We're not saying your life doesn't matter, but ours is in need because you guys keep killing us. Mm-hmm. And I have dealt with that. I've dealt with a lot of people saying racial slurs. Mm-hmm. Also, I wanted to touch, because you said the violence and the protesting, right? Mm-hmm.
That's been one of the critiques or ways that people have tried to discredit the movement in some ways, or the response.
See, how I feel is a lot of people are vocal about the looting, but silent about the murder. And I don't understand it. And them setting stuff on fire, looting Target, these things are all materialistic. They can be replaced. People have insurance. But the lives that have been lost cannot be replaced. They can no longer come back. And it really upsets me. Like, yes, this violence, like setting stuff on fire, it's sad that we have to set stuff on fire for us to get justice. But how I also feel is, no, it's not right, but we have every right to burn down a country we built for free.
What have I been doing? Let me see. For the last year, because of my health issues, I've tried to create a culture of safety for myself. And in doing that, I reach out to others, especially those that are in need. There are some people that have the virus that are calling me because, you know, we're at an awkward time. Because how can you handle something you can't even see or you can't even describe or you don't know about? So to see that happen at the same time just says that this is going to come to a head. It's exactly what's happening. And I think we need to rally behind the forces and let young people who have a future people who have many more tomorrows than we have today's. We need to let them do what they do best. And we need to be open to their understanding and not be hung up on our own self-indulgence. I think that's extremely important. As you can see, Nadia, we need to have 50 Nadias. We need to have 50 Naziers, because they are the ones that hopefully can make this place decent. I also said that they all need to get out and vote, because if we don't change the White House, we ain't seen nothing yet. So I think it's important for us to put everything in perspective. I think people need to hear from African-American males and females. They need to hear from brown males and females. They need to listen to what they're saying, and they need to see what category they can put it in, as opposed to trying to tell them what to do. Because I think by doing that, because they recognize us and they respect us, but we have to recognize and respect them. And I think if we turn that around, then there can be many more bright tomorrows than today's. We need to instill in each and every one of us that's listening tonight the value of otherness. Otherness should grow. Sameness, you drown in your own misery.
Thank you. Nadia, excuse me, Kylie, can you mentioned it, I would like you, because you've been part of this movement, can you talk about the Defund the Police movement and kind of how that's going and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking. So as I said, Defund the Police is not a new concept. It's something that organizers have been talking about locally for decades. And so the concept is pretty simple. I've heard a lot of people talking about how complicated it is. They don't get it. It's just, you don't want to get it. It's really not complicated. And it's really about divesting funds from a system that doesn't work, a system that was built in slave catching, a system that was intended to hunt, maim, and kill Black people, a system that disproportionately targets us for those reasons, a system that spends a ridiculous amount of money every single year at the tune of $100 million for law enforcement and $100 billion for law enforcement, and then and another $80 billion for incarceration. And so that's a lot of money, right? And so, and it doesn't work. This disproportionately attacks us, and we are, there's over-policing in our communities. Police are trained to use force in order to defuse all the situations. Police are the first people who are asked to respond to domestic issues. Most 911 calls are domestic issues or health-related issues. And police, those folks that are trained with force, are deployed for those issues. And so divestment is about, does that make sense? Probably not. Doesn't sound like it makes sense. What does make sense would be to think about how to reinvest some of those funds into programming that does work. So education, health, employment programming, mental health services, like those are services that will help build a community instead of making us feel unsafe and fearful because there are police on our streets patrolling us and wondering and pulling us over and asking us why we have a counterfeit, killing us because we have a counterfeit $20 bill, or perhaps allegedly. This, instead, we might want to deploy community resources to diffuse issues. Instead, we might want to invest some of that money. If we took, in some cities, if you take 5% of the police budget away, you could double things like housing. And it's just, it's really about transformation. It's really about, here's a moment where we are faced with this harsh truth that policing doesn't work. And we are faced with this opportunity to talk about what does work. And that's what Defund the Police is about. It is saying, imagine if instead of having police in schools, you have more teachers and counselors. Imagine if instead of sending police to respond to a mental health crisis, you deploy a counselor. That is what Defund the Police is about. It's about our communities and revitalizing them and fighting for them.
In one sense, you're not saying take money away from the police. We're saying use that money to actually create services that work for people in their communities. versus someone who's gonna, is not about control, but about development of communities.
That's right.
Perfect.
And also we need to look at the fact that we're in the information age. We're no longer strong into farming, industry, manufacturing. We're in information. Technology is part of the so-called new normal. So what can we do to help these two young people grow and develop in the new normal? What can we do we haven't been doing? How can we help youngsters out like this? First and foremost, I think we need to make certain they understand who they are and how important they are, because they are the future leaders of tomorrow, today, and they need to know about their ancestry. The spirits are talking to us. Save the babies. We need to support these young people. So to everyone out there, how can you grab 10 youngsters like Nadia, 10 youngsters like Nasir, and how can you put them in positions of responsibility so they can grow a productive community?
Yeah,
it's really important.
And I'd like to ask Nasir and Nadia, where would you like this, where do you want this movement to go? Like, you're our leaders. You're the ones we're gonna look to. Where will you be taking us? What is the world that we're recreating and transforming? Nasir.
You want me to speak?
Yeah, please, Nadia, please.
Wait, can you repeat that one more time?
This movement is on fire, and people, you know, as we've talked about, you know, folks are not moving. We're not going backwards. We're going forward. Where is that forward? Where are we going to? Where would you like that? What is your vision for the world?
I would like equality. I want justice for all. Like, I won't say the Pledge of Allegiance until there is justice for all. We need to be treated equally. That's what I want. I want everybody to be treated equally, the same, held accountable for the same. Have the same charges, not have a higher charge because of a race, because there are so many cases of Black people getting the higher charge and then the white person getting the less charge, and they did the same crime. I would like equality.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. Can you unmute?
I'm sorry. It's like
Poppy
is joining the room. I'm sorry. Is it Kylie?
Kylie.
Like she was saying, defunding the police, even though the term might be skewed up, even if you don't agree with defunding the police or whatever, we still need resources to go in these communities where we have these higher crime rates. Like she said, equality for all, that was something like that would be adjacent with something like equality. We need programs to help these poverty communities, like our community that is impoverished. In the if you look at statistics, we need more resources to help people get out these holes where they're creating more trauma and more trouble for each other. And it's like a cycle that won't keep on going, that will keep on going if we don't do anything. So it's like, I see a lot of people online, these higher upper 1% upper class people, talking about how we don't do stuff for ourselves. But what are you doing with all that money, all the resources you have? Are you going to these communities? Are you helping? Are you supporting policies that will help lower communities, impoverished communities, gain the things that they need so we can actually help better ourselves? So that's why I really do think people don't care about communities as a whole. They care about what they say and how they say it in themselves. So it's really like, we have to break the chains that is on our communities. And even if we can't get the resources from defunding the police, we have to fight for legislation to get us resources that we need. Just provide outlets for young people to express who they are, deal with trauma, counseling, like she said, just giving us opportunities to breathe, because we have all been through a lot. Even people who are older than us, some of them have been through a lot and need counseling and might need help. So it's like, we need more resources and more help.
Yeah, very much as Kylie said, and to contextualize this double, you know, struggle that we're engaged in, because we are in the age of COVID as well, where we've been socially isolated. But I think that also speaks to the commitment that people have, is that even in the midst of a pandemic, people are out because they have to be out. The times call for it. I don't know if any of, certainly our older folks, but Nasir and Nadia, if you want to weigh in as well. Some have said that we've been here before, right? Like 1968, after Dr. King was assassinated, that was a very graphic, visceral moment for Black America as well. And people took to the streets, but somehow the movement got stymied. What's gonna stop? How can we make sure that this movement in this moment doesn't get stymied, doesn't get co-opted, doesn't get reformed, but that we're able to really take it to the finish line this time, to really make the transformations that are necessary to give the world that Nadia and Nasir and all of us want? But how do we ensure that we keep this alive? Because we got to keep this alive. Any thoughts by any of you? What do you think about that?
I can share. Please. I think that somebody said it earlier. I think it's different. This moment feels different also because of social media and the fact that we're able to connect and see and learn and talk. I had a really great conversation earlier today with our colleagues in the UK, hearing about what's happening on the ground in the UK and the rumblings that are happening. And, you know, that wouldn't have been so easy, you know, many decades ago, to have those conversations, to see each other's faces on Zoom, to share stories, to connect. The other thing is that we have a global platform. That's what social media and just media in general has given us, a global platform to keep these messages going, to transform, to really penetrate the mainstream, if you will. And really, we know, we look outside, we see allies, we know who's out here, like it's everybody. And so we have the from different countries that have very few Black people even. And so we have this opportunity to keep the conversation going in that macro sense, because we can transform the way people are absorbing the content that they're getting. We can contribute to that. We did a video right after George Floyd passed away, went viral, 10 million views from all around the world, just a video. It was like a minute and a half. And so, and that contributes. So we have to remain vigilant. We have to remain steadfast. We have to continue to be truthful in our messaging, and ensure that we are asking for exactly what we need in this moment, because people are taking advantage of the moment that people are listening, and know that we have the opportunity to that our voices are amplified in such a way, with such a megaphone, that everything that we say has new power and has new prominence and has this new capability to penetrate souls and to mobilize everyone. So we have to really connect with that reality and do the thing.
You know, I would add to that by saying the good people, the almost 250 people we have on the line, we have a format here with the Civil Rights Heritage Center, and we need to show the community, since we're fortunate enough to say now it belongs to IUSB, that we need places like this that have the potential to garner bringing this many diverse people together. There's a value in that. There's a goodness in that, you know, and we need to set up more programs like this and introduce more people to this, because this might be the start of something very positive, very helpful, very beneficial. And believe me, they're doing this good a job. Imagine if some of those resources were to come to them.
Great. Any Nadia or Nasir, any? Yes, Nasir.
I feel like the, oh.
No, go please, go ahead, Nadia, I'm sorry. Nasir raises his hand. But no, please go.
Okay. I feel like the more diverse and the more that everybody comes together, the stronger we are. Like, we can't keep doing this because it's viral, it's a trending topic. We need to keep the same energy 365 days a year, 24/7. We need to keep protesting. We need to make our voices heard for change. The minute we stop, they're gonna be like, oh, they gave up, they're tired, like all that type of stuff. We need to keep fighting for what's right. Closed mouths don't get fed. Mm-hmm. We need to keep fighting and keep coming together. Like, I love going to the protest and see all different colors. It's so diverse. And I love to see that because it's just showing that everybody else is seeing that this isn't right and they're standing up for what is right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's see it.
I'm sorry, I'm just having the hardest time.
So you're fine.
But yeah, she Nadia actually touched on what I was gonna say. Like, we have to make sure people aren't just treating this as a hashtag or something that's trendy. We have to get everybody out there and to keep the momentum up to make people know that this is going on for way too long. And if we allow it to persist, we're never gonna get nowhere. Mm-hmm. Plus, the simple fact that Black people have been fighting this country, like the system that oppressed us, with bricks on our backs for centuries. So it's a helping change that we have the internet and other resources to reach out to other people all across the world, like in Brazil, France, Germany, Denmark, places that are protesting right now.
And also, Africa.
In Africa, to get in on the fight. So it's like, yeah, we just have to keep the momentum going and fight this system until we can reform it and deconstruct it.
So I'm just looking at some of the comments that are coming in, and one of them is that, you know, the most concrete thing that's been articulated is defunding the police and reforming the police. And one comment is that if we limit the movement to police reform, we will have wasted an opportunity. How do we connect the reform the police, the defund the police, to the bigger structural issues that need to be addressed as well? Yep, continue. Go ahead, Nasir.
I think we keep them connected because it's just a simple fact. Just look at history. Post-Reconstruction in America, these systems like chain gangs, prisoners for hire, were constructed to put Black people in a situation where they can keep on building money and economic growth for the country. And when the 13th Amendment was passed, now anybody who's seen as a criminal can go to jail. They start mass incarcerating Black people. So just knowing all of that history as a fact can show people, like, reforming the police, defunding the police, and doing something with all these resources that's going to the prison system and the criminal justice system and policies that oppress Black people and people of color will make it obvious to show that something has to be done.
Do you have thoughts on that, Kylie?
Yeah, I think that Nasir really said it. This, the policing and criminal justice reform in general, and incarceration, it's a huge system to topple over. It has impacted Black people for centuries. It has colored the way we view ourselves. It has colored the way we live in our communities. It is a huge system to topple. And when we talk about revitalizing and transforming our communities, we are talking about building economic power. We're talking about building employment opportunities. We're talking about all the things that we were systematically denied so that others could thrive in order for us to be able to get what we deserve, what we need. And so I think that that's how we keep it connected. It's about toppling the systems that are intended to keep us oppressed. And we need to be able to draw all the connections to all the systems and ask, like I said, for all the things in this moment. So I completely agree with Nasir.
I think we also need to focus on our health. All of us. The most difficult thing we're dealing with is who we are health-wise. I'm thankful to be 75. I've got my challenges. I've got my issues. But Nadia and Nasir, you got those young, strong bodies. Take care of them. They're your temples. everyone out there, take care of yourself. It's your temple. Come together, talk about nutrition, talk about how we can personally help keep the negativism called pandemic virus off of our backs. We have to look at our health. I see that being very important.
Yeah, and I just wanted to build on that. That's a really, really important point. In particular, we were talking earlier about generational trauma. We carry that trauma in our bodies, and it manifests in stress, and it creates a lot of what we see as pre-existing conditions. When we're under stress, our livers produce more insulin. We have diabetes. We have high blood pressure because of the stress that we're under in the communities that we live in. So self-care and mental health is critical for us to prioritize and to fight for and to ensure that we are doing what we ourselves can do in the meanwhile. So meditation techniques, breathing techniques, making sure that we prioritize all of the things that Brother Sage just said is absolutely critical, because this is a marathon. We need to be fortified. We need to be able to do the work and continue the work. It's a long haul. And if we're not in the best health, and we're tired and we're weary and our spirit is low, we're not gonna deliver. So if we're empty, we can't go. But yeah.
And as the two youngsters said, we also gotta talk. We gotta communicate. And all the old timers have to learn how to shut up and listen to what the young people are saying. Because if you do that, we can help them and they'll respect and recognize us much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was gonna just kind of add on to that we have to take care of ourselves, and we also have to take care of one another. That's a critical piece of it as well. That we have to really make sure that each of us are getting what we need and nurturing and supporting one another, because it is a long haul. This is a marathon. And Brother Sage, you've been around the block a couple of times, if I could frame it like that. Do you have any? We're kind of getting close to time, but do you have any other wisdom you want to pass on, or that you've seen and experienced that make this moment something that we can not only see as a historical moment, but as a hopeful moment as well, like that we actually can make some transformations that will get us to the other side.
I first of all want to thank everyone who's tuned in. I also want to say to both Nasir and Nadia, you know, and to all the other young people that may be listening or may not listen in or will listen in later on, you're very beautiful. We love you very much. Okay? Want you both to know that. You're going to be tremendous as you grow and develop. And good luck in that process, because you'll find the journey to be most interesting. Be open to the understanding. It's going to present itself to you in a variety of different ways. Okay, and remember, only the strong survive. Okay, and in terms of everyone else, you know, let's see what we can do about this. I'm issuing you a challenge. I want to see what we can do to build on what we've established tonight that can help this be a better community to live in. And if you don't do it, hey, don't say we didn't ask.
Nadia, do you have, before we have to sign off, I would love to hear if you have anything you would like to say before we go.
I just want to say thank you to everybody who is watching and listening and hearing our voices, because our voices need to be heard. I just want to say we need to keep sticking together. We need to keep educating people. We need to keep protesting. We need to make our voices heard. We need to keep signing petitions. We need to keep fighting. The more we fight, the stronger we become, and the more they become scared of us, and more justice will be served. I just want to say, if you have a voice, make your voice heard. I didn't expect to be here, and I spoke, and my voice was heard. So if you want to speak, speak. Make your voice heard. There's nothing wrong with it. And if somebody doesn't agree with you, then they're not right.
Right on. Right on. Thank you. Nasir. Do you have anything you want to part with?
Actually, I'm just going to echo what Nadia said. I really appreciate everybody tuning in, and our elders and my predecessors giving us that opportunity for our voices to be heard. I just say, keep on educating yourself, focus on your mental health, go vegan, I'm vegetarian, it's cool. and just continue to focus on the good fight, because in the end, we have to think about all the generations that have to come after us. They are the people who really matter. They are the young people who matter.
Mm-hmm. And Kylie, you are working your ass off. I mean, I'm going to just say it straight up. And I know you've been like super busy. So I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us. I would love to hear if you have anything you want to leave us with before we end the session as well.
Yeah, it's hard to follow the young people because they're so eloquent, and I don't want to take away from the spirit of what they've left. But just as words of encouragement, as everyone else has done, this world is yours to change and yours to transform. And I know you'll do it because I see you doing it. And just remember our responsibility. Your responsibility is to make things better than you found it. And you just keep doing that. And we're here to support you. We're here to mentor you, but your job is to keep this world, make this world better than what you found.
And tell me just quickly, how can people, if they want to get involved with Black Lives Matter on the global network, how can they do that?
Yeah, just visit blacklivesmatter.com, or you can text transform to 24365.
Mm-hmm. Great. And for those of you who are more local, you can get involved with the Civil Rights Heritage Center. We're physically closed still because of the pandemic, but we're deeply engaged in all of the events that are happening locally here in South Bend. And the Black Lives Matter chapter here in South Bend, as many of you know, in our town, has been incredibly active and on the ground and organizing and bringing multiracial, intergenerational, multigendered groups together to protest and to really fight for the social transformation that make the world that we all want. And we had a victory for Black Lives Matter in stopping the police from getting a salary increase this week. That was a little step. We got a long journey yet ahead of us, but come join us, and because we're not going anywhere. We're continuing the struggle as long as it needs to be carried on. So I would like to thank everybody for your time and being here. Thank our audience for joining us in this conversation. And we'll see you next time. Take good care.